What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of the number one sports podcast in the Southeast Michigan area. I'm your host, Connor. This is Teeing It Up with C&V. I'm the C of the C&V, as always, with my co-host, the V of the C&V, Vladdy. What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. We were just talking before this. I got a short week, so tomorrow's my last day of work, and then I kind of have that 3-day weekend. I know it's been it, we don't really record these on Mondays, just given how some of the sporting events have kind of gone around the last couple of days.
Yeah.
But this past weekend, Team Rochester defeated Team Northville, so I'm
Yeah.
doing great. I'm still riding that high, so go team there. Other than that, though, kind of same old. Work is slightly slow at the moment, so that's kind of been good, co coinciding with the Euros. I've been able to watch a lot of the soccer. We'll get into that, but I'm doing well. Ready for the 4th of July next week. I'm not really sure what, if anything, we'll have to talk about. Maybe it'll be one of those breaks that we sometimes take in the summer, but we get there when we get there. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Obviously, I was on Team Northfield that got handed its first ever loss in that event. The difference was one team was proactive and hit balls before, and the other team was not and hit four balls out of play on their first tee shot of the day. That's when you lose on something that you clearly could have controlled, it's very frustrating. But, we'll be back at them next year. Other than that, I'm doing just dandy. It's summertime, nothing to complain. And as much as I do love talking and watching sports, having this kind of July lull, I guess you call it, before football starts ramping up is somewhat of a peace of mind for me. I didn't necessarily, there was the like, sports are over Monday night, and but I did also wake up Tuesday and was just like, okay, time to find some other areas of your life that have maybe been neglected over the past 11 months. Before we go right back into it, into the most sports unhealthy season of all, in the as that being the fall. But let's get into some topics today. We've got the Stanley Cup wrapping up. We've got the we're going to mention the College World Series. I kind of forgot to mention anything about it. Didn't really watch a ton until the actual last, best two out of three final, in the game Monday night. We're going to spend some time over the Euros and how that's kind of shaping up over the last week and a half now, a week, whatever. It's been about a week now, right?
Oh, more. It's been 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They're more or less
Sorry.
concluded with the group stage at this point.
Yep. And then we're going to kind of see where we're at with the live streaming of the draft, and we're going to do a preview slash talk about it. So should be a fun episode. I guess I could start because that's kind of the main topic of anything else. But I guess the Euros are just as important too. But Game 7, the NHL playoffs concluded Monday night in one of the more historic Game 7s and series you'll ever see, and all the hype behind it. And to be honest, the Panthers won, and I think a lot of that went out the window side, at least for me. With the Panthers winning, it was all for naught. The 3-0 comeback. Could they be the first team ever to do it in the Stanley Cup final? Actually, I think it was 1942. Some other team did it. So it's the second team, first since the US defeated Germany in World War II. Fun fact, because that was 1942. The war ended in 1945. Anyways, irrelevant. It was a 2-1 game. It was exactly what you kind of thought a game seven would be. A lot of, clenched buttholes, so to speak. Not a lot of gripping the stick tight, not wanting to make the first mistake. Ultimately, floor or sorry, Edmonton did, going down 1-0, and then they turn Edmonton turned around and made it 1-1, I believe, 2 minutes later. And then it kind of held tight. You had the 6-minute stretch late in the second period where there was no whistles. It was just back and forth, fast, physical. And I think it kind of, especially towards the end in the third period, you kind of saw what I was talking about with this Florida team and how heavy and physical and how hard they are to play against, because McDavid and Draisaitl were just gassed at the end. But anyways, it's a Sam Reinhart goal. It's kind of unlucky. Edmonton gets a nice scoring chance. Puck's right there. It doesn't go in. Turn around, fast break the other way. 3-on-2. Sam Reinhart finds a corner on Skinner, Stuart Skinner. Not one you can necessarily fault him for, but I think it's the epitome of what the Oilers were lacking overall and why they weren't the cup winner this year. And that's keeping the puck out of your own net, whether that's defense or goaltending, is that you need those types of saves to win a Stanley Cup. You need guys to come up with, that fast break save. It wasn't necessarily like an oh my God save, but it's a, and it wasn't necessarily like, oh my God, that's a bad goal by letting it in. But when you want to win a Stanley Cup, you need those saves down the stretch, let alone in a game seven of that magnitude. And he just wasn't able to give it to them. On the other end, after two horrific, three horrific games, to be honest, goalie Bob Bobrovsky played lights out. He really was on his game. He took practice off Sunday. That was kind of the big storyline going into it. And people were like, well, is he in his own head? Is he injured? Is he affecting his game? No, he was the first star for them the entire night because Edmonton had their chances. They ultimately did get outplayed, I felt like, and the better team did win that game. But they definitely had their chances, and Bobrovsky himself was great. So with Bobrovsky's great performance, I think that makes me want to go in on McDavid. And McDavid, after going back-to-back 4-point games, goes no points in games 6 and 7. Did I have a brain fart there? Did he have a? No, he did not. It was CC to Janmark. Sorry. So no points in games 6 and 7. He kind of, I don't want to say goes by the wayside as far as his performance, because he still was the best player on the ice in those two games, in his own fashion. But you were looking for a generational talent, a guy, who's breaking all these records. He broke Wayne Gretzky's assist record for the playoffs to have his moment, to win his cup. It's all the great ones in sports are measured by their championships. And when the game's on the line, you want him to have that moment, and he just didn't have it. He was going out there every other shift in the third. You saw at the end, he falls down kind of waywardly. There's some bad errant passes. It just seemed like they just purely ran out of gas. And I'll credit Florida because they were just hard and heavy and physical and super hard to play against. And that's why they were the cup champion. That's what makes cup champions in this league year after year. But if you really want to go down as a great, you got to have your moment there for me. And I'm not going to criticize. I believe he just turned 27 this year. I saw some stats of like Mike Modano was 28, Steve Yzerman was 31, Steven Stamkos was 29. That he's got time to win his cups or to win, even win multiple. Jordan didn't win for the first, what was it, 7 years of his career. And I think McDavid's kind of right around there. I think he's in year, what would that be? Year 8 or 9 now. So it's definitely not the be all end all for this, but in those types of games and those types of moments, you want a career guy to have his moment, I guess. And he just didn't. And that's a blemish in my mind. What's funny is people criticize it. He did end up winning the Conn Smythe, which is the MVP of the playoffs. He didn't go out to accept the award. A lot of people were criticizing him because of that. I think that's a great team move, actually, and he didn't wreck from the moment for anybody from Florida, so I was okay with that. But yeah, as a whole, Florida was one of the best teams, probably a top four team throughout. This is exactly who I had in my cup final going into it. I had Edmonton winning, though. I had it being McDavid. Happy for guys like Barkov, a guy that I don't usually root for, but was happy to see win a cup, and Matthew Tkachuk. And a team that, in a market where hockey is not predominant, and they've gone through a lot of years of being bad, and they've, over the last 3 or 4 years, been a steady diet of being at the top and making long runs. Obviously, they lost in the finals last year. For whoever is a Florida Panther fan, if they're out there, you deserve this. This is something that, and a fan base that has definitely paid their dues and licked their chops. It's their first franchise. It's their first win as a franchise. Sorry, those are the words I was looking for, since they became a team in the late 90s. So yeah, that's kind of my recap. What could have been is I, You're almost like you. I keep bringing up this star moment with McDavid, and it's just like it's what it could have been. Is what maybe it's just me being a little bitter because I did want to see it. I wanted Edmonton to win, but Florida just holding off the dogs, so to speak, and being able to win Game 7 took away from what could have been a greater moment, even though it was such a special moment.
Yeah, so I got to watch the game seven. I didn't watch much of a series before that, but I think you kind of made a good, very, very good point with the Stuart Skinner. I think the second goal specifically, where it kind of looked like he was almost cheating to the other post and gets beat.
Yeah, Reinhart kind of looked him off, like he was looking past, and I think you're right that maybe Stuart Skinner was like cheating a little bit based off that, and then he ripped the shot. So yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, and then the other thing is I agree with the McDavid thing. Congrats on winning that MVP, whether it's deserved or not deserved. There's always the argument that people are going to say that, oh my God, I mean, this is technically this isn't the finals MVP. This is a postseason MVP, so that's probably why he won it. But there's the argument that if you didn't win the cup, how are you going to be the postseason MVP? So I see both sides of it, but I like the
Good
Henry
rock.
mention. He doesn't come out to take it because what's he going to do? Go smile out there? That's not gonna. Why am I gonna smile about losing? I mean, I'll get into this something kind of similar with Croatia, where they had a similar moment. So, yeah, I think it was interesting where you had. I was telling you before this was like. Obviously, I don't know the most background history, but that's what I feel like. That was one of the more important game sevens that or games that NHL hockey's kind of seen. I mean. Canada not having a title since what, 92, I think it is, or 94.
Yeah, 94.
Then there's obviously the 3-0 stuff. There's the McDavid, the greatest player of the generation, finally crowning himself. So there was so many storylines and so much back and forth kind of with just the series. So I'm glad that it gave us a series and gave us things to talk about because as we haven't mentioned in a while, there's been no basketball to talk about. So that was nice to see. But I enjoyed watching the hockey. I'll give you guys some credit. You have some good playoffs.
Yeah, it's a great event. And yeah, the McDavid, the going back, I lean in the camp of the Conn Smythe should go to somebody who wins the cup. He was the first, I think he was the first skater to ever get it. I think there were like three or four goalies who had won it and not won the cup. The last one was like 2003 or four. I think it was John G. Jagr. Shell legend for the young kids out there or for who are young in the OOs. But I don't know. I like you said, I see both sides of that.
Yeah, so other than that, maybe some of the smaller topics before we get into the Euros. And then the other thing that's going to be entertaining is we are going to live react to the NBA draft. The Pistons are picking early enough where we kind of started this episode a little later. So we're going to see the Pistons pick, and that'll probably be the end of the episode after that. But for me, from my perspective, I'll kind of quickly mention Scottie Scheffler grows his beard out again. Wins a tournament again. Probably not a coincidence at this point. That is the source of his power. It has been confirmed. Kind of, I think that's his first win as a father, right? Or maybe
No,
second.
he won the week before he won the memorial.
Okay. So maybe, okay, how about this? First one is a father with his kid in attendance.
Nope, the kid was there for the memorial.
Damn it, I suck at this. All right, I'm a casual, but all right, fine. The first one where we got taken to a playoff. I know this is true.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
That's a tough scene, but yeah, I mean, he wins again. More power to him. The only reason I even bring this up from a slightly bigger perspective is because some of these numbers are starting to rival Tiger Woods' best ever seasons. And I know the majors aren't there. I think in 2000, Tiger had the three majors. Scotty has one right now with one more to play. I just want to say that, I mean, what is that? His seventh win before July or sixth win before July?
Yeah, I hate to say it, Vladdy, but I'm kind of in the camp where it's super impressive. But I'm starting to like kind of look at them not like I don't really find it crazy as impressive as others do. He was quite frankly awful in the last two majors. These PGA, even these sponsored events that he's won, whatever, five out of seven of them this year, don't feature what? two of the best five players in the world, maybe two, four or five of the top 20 players in the world.
Sure. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying the numbers are starting to rival, and obviously numbers are not created equal. You're right. Half of the golf world plays on a different tour. Rory McIlroy's not there because he's trying to figure out how to read a 3 foot downhill putt. I understand that. I'm just saying that the numbers are starting to get there, man.
Yes.
I'm not calling him. I would never do that because you are correct. It was a different level. The technology's better. Just it's a different sport. I understand that. But the numbers are starting to get there.
And I understand that there's way more like good, like amazing competition than even when Tiger was playing 15, 20 years ago. But you gotta win. And I hate saying this because it should just be total Masters, but like his kind of lack of being there in any other event not called the two Masters he's won kind of diminishes it for me a little bit.
Fair.
I don't know. Like, you just like to see somebody win. He's like, there's, you know how many guys right now are good players with two majors? Like, that would not be the case with Tiger. Like, around his, within like 3 or 4 years of his age, Colin Morikawa has two. Bryson DeChambeau has two. Jon Rahm has two. Who else am I missing on this two list? Go through past champions. Justin Thomas has two. Jordan Spieth has more than two. So I just named five of their guys that are within 4 years of his age that are in the same category as him.
I'm not even necessarily debating the overall career. I'm just saying I kind of meant maybe more so from the season, maybe as opposed
Yeah.
to so far. It's just like he's starting to get there.
Yeah. Another thing to mention with that, Tom Kim is who we played in that playoff.
Yes.
And for as much as he's, I think, a top 30 player in the world right now, he kind of got on tour early and has been forgotten about because he's kind of either in it or really not in it. And I think that's a testament. Scottie Scheffler at 22 years old was not on the PGA Tour. If Tom Kim would have won that, he would have had four PGA Tour wins at age of 22. Don't count that kid out as being the next guy in three,
Sure.
4 years.
Yeah, and that's
We
kind of.
forget that he's been on the tour for two or 3 years now. He's still 22 years old. He's still 3, 4, 5 years younger than most of the young guys out there.
I don't disagree, and that's maybe kind of one of the things that made Tiger so special is his run of dominance wasn't 2 years, it was 10 years, it was 12 years. I
Yeah.
completely agree with you. You're right that this guy's going to show up, he's going to have a run, and then maybe someone else will have a run. Someone else will come back to limelight. I'm just saying that the numbers are starting to get there.
Yeah, okay. Fair. That was a bit more than I thought we'd dabble into for the
Absolutely.
travelers,
You're
but
right. But
another small topic. I wish I could have done a little bit more of a preview, but there's some underlyings with this one that need to be talked about. The College World Series for baseball. Tennessee wins. They beat Texas A&M, best two out of three in game three Monday night, along with the Stanley Cup. Good game, actually, back and forth. Tennessee pulls away late. Kind of got a lineup of guys that I think there's like one guy that's going to be a top pick, but other than that, just a lot of really good college players, really solid college arms. And that Vitelli guy, he's a younger guy. I think he's in his late 30s or early 40s. It's his first big gig. He's done a great job changing that culture. They've been kind of the top dog along with Florida the last 3 years since he's been there. I'm not crazy about the culture. I'm a bit of an old man when it comes to baseball. They borderline taunt, I think, with some of the shit they do. So I'm not crazy about his program in general in terms of that. But what he's done has been very impressive. And to quickly turn this around into a national championship after being the number one seed and pretty much the number one team in the country for most of the year is very impressive. It's the second year in a row that the number one seed has won it all, which. Before that happened, LSU last year, I think it was 1998, was the first time. That was the big stat for LSU last year, that was the first number one seed overall to win it all. And then we get that back-to-back years. And I mean, you had Tennessee and A&M was the third overall seed. So not a lot of surprises there. I think the College World Series had, I want to say, four or five of the eight teams were SEC. It's just an SEC ruled sport. with a little bit of ACC sprinkled in there, as far as like Carolina, Virginia, some of those Southern, Clemson, some of those Southern schools. That's kind of the state of that sport. But what I wanted to get at more importantly, after being one game away from a national championship after 3 years at the helm, 24 hours after a national championship, the Texas A&M, I could use a long last, it's like Shule something, transfer, or not transfers, signs a contract to be the next coach of the University of Texas, his third Texas University school since the pandemic. He was the TCU coach for a while, had a great run there. They're a good program. Texas A&M for 3 years, and now Texas. What's controversial about this is he essentially flipped the chair and just got very offended at. Did you see the question that was asked in the press conference to him of like what's your future with A&M? And he basically like scoffed and made a huge like, how dare you ask me that question, and stormed off essentially. And like, how, like, I've put my heart and soul into this program, yada yada yada. And less than 24 hours later, he leaves for essentially a rival school in the University of Texas. It's just the wild, wild west of college sports. It's just another example of that, I think. And that it's not only coach or not only players, but now coaches, and not even in football and basketball, but also baseball and other sports. And again, the controversy here is that there's rumors that he was having assistants recruit players as early as before the NCAA tournament, which would have been almost a month ago, to go to Texas. In case you didn't know, that is highly illegal. And highly frowned upon. And if that's true, he's probably not going to be the coach of Texas for very long. His days are probably shorter than Mike Babcock's in Columbus, Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, although he got to, actually got to play games. But you get the point.
Did Chris Beard, sorry to interrupt, did Chris Beard get a year at Texas before all
That
his off
was
the
literally,
court stuff showed
yeah,
up, or?
he did coach games there, but that's exactly who I was thinking of too next. And that would be ironic because it's Texas again, but I want to say he was like mid-season actually.
So, Texas is just setting a speed run world record for how quickly can we hire a coach and then have to fire him because of public outcry, or in this case, actual illegal things that are not okay with the sport.
Yeah. But something to note in a sport we don't usually talk about. And maybe we'll have to start talking about baseball because that's all there's going to be. I guess we've got soccer and the Olympics here coming up, but
Yeah, I mean,
let's get into some soccer.
I was just going to say, I mean, with the soccer, I mean, the Euro is going to go on for 2, 3 more weeks, and then there will be some downtime. But once we get into those late July, early August days, we can almost do kind of just football previews, top 10 lists here, top 5 lists there, projections here, just because we got all the time in the world. But yeah,
Yeah.
with the soccer, so we've got Euro 2024 going on. There is also Copa America, but I will spend little to no time talking about that because, quite frankly, I don't care about the Copa America. I think it's a Mickey Mouse tournament. It's not at the same scale. It's not the same level of kind of from every single perspective of the teams as the
US is
one
one
in
and oh.
Europe. What?
The US is one and oh. Move
They
on.
are 1-0, but that doesn't really mean much to me. The USC shouldn't even be in the Copa America. They're
I
not. They're not
know.
from what?
I said, I know. That's the funniest
Yeah,
part.
that's what I'm saying. Like, obviously, it's not actually kind of is South America's fault that there's only 9 countries in South America that have functioning teams, so they always have to recruit other teams to show up and play.
Yeah,
But
wasn't Qatar in it last time?
yeah, Qatar was in. They always do kind of invite, and obviously the US has been there before. I mean, back in 2016 when they hosted once again the Copa America here. But it's not a tournament for me. I
Yeah,
don't
the
care
fact that
for it
you
more.
can't even host your own event at a normal country that's in the event says a lot. Like the
Well, they
fact that
do
they need the
typically host
US
it.
there.
I don't want to sit here and pretend like this is something where, oh my God, they don't have infrastructure, or they're just so poor, and so much riots go down in South America they can't do it. It's just they wanted to host a big tournament for some reason. They brought in obviously more than just the U.S. Jamaica's here, Panama's here, Costa Rica, Mexico. So you do have a fair amount of kind of your North American teams to be able to do this. It's just I don't understand the principle. Unless you want to sit here and go forward and combine the two North and South American qualifying regions of CONCACAF and CONMEBOL, you can do that. But that also is other stupid questions that you have to bring up later. I don't understand why they do it. It's dumb to me. But We said we were going to talk about the Euro. Let's talk about the Euro. So we're doing this on a Wednesday for a couple of reasons. So obviously, we couldn't do this Monday because the NHL was going on, and the group stage concluded today, which is a perfect time to be able to talk about the brackets that are set, some of the teams that impressed, some of the ones that infuriated, some that disappointed, kind of what went on, because the third match day of these international tournaments is always so much fun with the simultaneous kickoffs and how quickly things change for all teams that are still alive. So here we go. Pretty much every single group stage match was great. It had so much going for it. There were a few, obviously, that were duds, and they all had two things in common, and I will get to those two things later. I talked last week about the fan support and how it's really been 6 years since the Europeans have been able to really travel for tournaments like this. And I don't know if you've seen any of these reels or TikToks where there's the dude with the saxophone and people are just surrounding him in massive crowds. Have you? So those have been kind of all over the place. It's been super, super, super enjoyable, where it's kind of the epitome of like what these international tournaments are about. They sit there and you it's almost like a celebration of cultures. You have people kind of getting along. I know there's been Germany and Scotland. They were in the same group and they played each other, and apparently the fans all got along so well that they're kind of starting petitions to make a Germany Scotland game a yearly thing and just alternating host countries. I guess it's crazy what happens when you find two countries that love beer and have them play each other. So there's that. But kind of moving forward, the massive crowds have been amazing. There's some countries, I think I mentioned last week, Croatia has had probably 70% of the crowd in every game they've played. The Turks have had an amazing fan support. Romania, amazing fan support. So the Netherlands are all over the place. So it's been so much fun. And every single group had so much to play for going into that third match day. So I'll kind of talk mostly about that. I don't want to go back through and pick or one or two matches from match day two. Just, it's not going to do much. For people who are listening, don't really understand what the simultaneous kickoffs mean or why they are. They play the last game of these groups always at the same time so that there is no collusion that goes on between teams, because in the past, there was an instance where two teams, I think this was late 80s, two teams were told, or not told, they basically knew, if we tie this game, both of us go through, so why risk anything? So they sat there for, I think, the last 40 minutes of the game, just passing it to each other, not trying. And that's when I think FIFA and UEFA kind of realized, hey, we cannot do this. So simultaneous kickoffs happen. And as I said, all of that, it's funny. I'm going to give you a counterpoint to this later, but that's because of a stupid bullshit rule that UEFA has with this type of tournament. So lots of contradicting going on, lots of ranting for me. So let's go. Let's start in Group A. You had Germany, Switzerland, Hungary, and Scotland. Germany and Switzerland were playing each other for first place in the group. The Germans had two wins. The Swiss had a win and a draw. And the Swiss actually took a shocking lead to start off with. They led for 99% of this game, and they were actually going to be first place in the group. Right at the death, the Germans score, tie it up, snatch back first place in the group. And it's kind of funny that that turns out to be a bad thing almost based on the way the bracket kind of plays out, if you will. That's the top of the group. At the bottom of the group, you had Scotland and Hungary. So Hungary was kind of on the way out. They had no points, and had they won, their goal difference would have been so bad that they probably would not have been able to advance. But Scotland, if Scotland had won the game, they would have almost certainly been into the next round. So this game was super fun. Both of these teams just kind of said, you know what, screw it. One team's like, we don't have much to play for, we'll go have some fun. The other one's saying, we need to score, we need to win. A tie doesn't help us. So Scotland went for it. They attacked. They left themselves open at the back, and eventually it caught up with them. Especially into the kind of in the knockout into knockout into extra time. Still 0-0. The Scottish are kind of throwing the kitchen sink at the door, trying to get in. And then Hungary goes on a counterattack, scores, beats him 1-0, and knocks out Scotland. So you kind of had your group end with Germany first place, Switzerland second, Hungary in third, and Scotland in fourth. Both of those two teams in third and fourth were eliminated. Group B, one of the games was not as interesting. It was Spain and Albania. Spain had already clinched top spot in the group, so they kind of rested their team. And it did allow Albania to have a chance to beat them, and Albania was in a similar spot to Scotland, where had they won, they probably would have qualified. However, wasn't enough for them. I think they gave it a good shot, but the Spanish won 1-0. The other game was absolute madness. Croatia were on 1 point. They needed to beat Italy. If they had beat Italy, they would have qualified. First half, scoreless. Second half, Croatia gets a penalty. Luka Modric steps up. He gets his penalty saved. And then kind of the camera pan obviously goes over to the Italian goalie. He's celebrating. You don't really know where the ball is. It's still in play at the time. Camera pans back in. Croatia whips in across. Shot blocked by goalie. Lands back at Luka Modric's feet, and he scores. So in the span of 30 seconds, he went from zero to hero, missing the penalty, then scoring. Croatia are 1-0 up and on the verge of qualifying. Italy, in this point, would have probably not qualified had it stayed like this. But unfortunately, with the very, I mean, the last kick of the game in the 99th or the 98th minute of 98 possible, Italy goes forward, one pass, great, great finish by the Italian. I think Zaccagni was his name, or I don't know what it is. Great, great finish by the man. Kills the Croatians. They are out. And it was for me personally, I mean, it's no secret. I'm a big Luka Modric, big Croatian supporter. Because of that, it was brutal as a fan. I was kind of sitting there, and it's like, wow, I'm genuinely sad leaving work at the end of this game. And this is kind of where I brought up the McDavid thing. Luka Modric ended up winning man of the match in that game, and they forced him come out there with his little stupid man of the match trophy to pose in front of a Budweiser commercial board, and you can just see his eyes are pink. Like, he's sitting there crying. They've been eliminated, but he's got to sit up there holding this stupid trophy. And so I don't know if that's what it would have been like for McDavid, but it's at least nice that he had the option to not have to go out there, because that was tough. So Spain and Italy qualified first and second, Croatia in third, Albania in fourth. Spain and Italy qualify. Group C was the worst group of the tournament. And it's not shocking that it had the most infuriating team in the tournament. Only one of the six games in this group did not end in a tie.
Wow.
That's horrific. It was England beating Serbia 1-0 in the first game. And after that, it was tie, 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 which I guess to an extent, that's kind of cool, because it allowed all of the games to have meaning. All four teams were still alive. All four teams could have been knocked out, I'm pretty sure, going into that third game. And as usual, we got scoreless tie and scoreless tie. If I'm not mistaken, I think there was only four or five goals scored over six games between all four teams. It was pathetic. And again, it's not shocking that England were in this group.
So,
Absolute felons.
besides England, how does the tiebreaker work?
Well, we'll get there. So this is entertaining. So England finished on 5 points. Denmark and Slovenia finished on 3 points, and Serbia finished on 2 points. Denmark and Slovenia, they ended up tied everywhere. They tied on points. They tied on goals scored. They tied on, I
Goals
think,
against.
obviously, goal. I think their goals against was the same. I don't even know if that's one of the tiebreakers, but like, they look at wins, goal difference, some of this stuff. They even tied. So, like, the last determining factor is how many yellow cards did your players get over the three games?
All
They
right.
tied in. They tied in that as well.
Oh my
And
God.
eventually, Denmark got the nod over Slovenia because the Slovenian coach had gotten a yellow card. And now, I don't know if that's part of the players, or if they just made up a rule because they didn't want to go flip a coin for it, or whatever they do, if whatever they do had that happened. But Denmark gets the nod as second in the group. Slovenia is third. Slovenia still qualified, so I guess it's not the most damning thing. Where, I mean, if you could you imagine getting knocked out because your coach
Yeah.
got a yellow card? That would suck. And you
He would
and
never
it's
coach a Euro again.
honestly, I actually will defend him. It's not like they knew this in the moment. Like,
True.
and I will talk about a ref that went power hungry later on. Like, there's some really stupid rules at this European Championships, and it kind of, like, they sit there and they're like, oh yeah, this is all for the image of the game, but you almost do more harm than good, and I will talk about that. So there was that group C. We go into group D, which to me, this was the group that had the most drama going into the final day, with just kind of three teams all still alive for first place in the group. Those three teams were France, Netherlands, and Austria. France and Netherlands went into the day with 4 points apiece. Austria went in with three, and there was Poland with zero at the bottom. So this is where the beauty and the drama of simultaneous kickoffs happens. So games kick off. Austria takes a quick lead on the Netherlands. This means that Austria is now in first place. Then, however, the Dutch equalized to make it 1-1 in that game. They're playing each other. France is playing Poland. When the Dutch equalized, the Dutch go back to first place. Then the French take the lead against the Polish. The French go into first place. Then Austria takes the lead again over the Netherlands, which pushed the Netherlands down to third and Austria in second, while France was still in first. Then the Polish equalized against France, which pushed France down to second and Austria in first, with the Ne actually, no, it pushed France down to third with the Netherlands in second and Austria in first. Meanwhile, the Austrians score again. Then the Dutch equalize again, putting themselves in first now that both games were tied. Then the Austrians score again to make it 3-2 them, and they are in first place. France is in second, Netherlands in third. And that's kind of how the game ended. But in a span of 20 minutes, there was all kinds of permutations of who's in first, who's in second, who's in third. And at all points, all of those teams were safe, but there was never like, oh my God, we might be out. It's not like they were Poland. Like Poland was kind of screwed to begin with. But there was so much flip-flopping in the order of that group. And that's kind of just what makes it so magical. I mean, there was, you're not going to remember this, but some people who are listening might. Back at the last World Cup in Qatar in 2022, there was a group. It was Germany, Spain, Japan, and Costa Rica. It might not have been Costa Rica, but it was someone else. I think it was Costa Rica. But they went into that game, and for 5 minutes, Spain and Germany were out, and the other two teams were in. And then obviously things flip-flopped, and then I think Spain went through and Japan went through. That's not necessarily the biggest point, but it's just the having the simultaneous kickoffs where, again, you prevent the collusion of happening of, oh, we're just going to screw over team X that's not playing right now. It makes it so much fun. So the way that the order ended here was Austria in first, France in second, the Netherlands in third, Poland in fourth. Poland was the team that did not qualify. We go into Group E, where this had the potential to be just as interesting. The group I just talked about, all four teams walked into the day on 3 points. All four teams had one win and one loss, so everyone was alive. All of the seeding was still there, and it fell flat. Both games end in ties. The order stayed the same as it was going into the day, and it was kind of dumb. Now, this is where earlier I mentioned that games are played simultaneously to avoid collusion. However, that wasn't totally the case here. Because this European Championships, because certain third place teams go through, the dust had settled where if Romania and Slovakia were to have tied their game, both would have been guaranteed to go through, while one of them would have been a third place team. So Romania, they went down 1-0. Slovakia scored a good goal. Then there was a controversial penalty called where there was a foul, but was it in the box? Was it outside the box? VAR looked at it, but didn't really change anything. And they called the penalty. Romania tied the game 1-1 going into halftime. And the second half was a little bit more of kind of that cagey, again, almost collusion-like feeling where both of these teams, and especially as the clock is ticking down, I don't necessarily blame them, but both of these teams, they didn't even try. It was just keep the ball, don't lose it, don't be the villain. If we're doing what we're doing right now, we're through, we get to extend our tournament. And again, I don't blame them. There's no, you're, if you're guaranteed to go through, especially as that clock is ticking down, why would you try and screw yourself for what? A better draw? You don't even know what the better draws are because this is such a weird tournament. So that game was flat. Then there was the Belgian-Ukraine game where that game was just absolutely disgusting. 0-0. Romelu Lukaku, the guy that we kind of made fun of on Saturday, once again missed some chances. So all four teams ended up on 4 points. Ukraine drew the short end of the stick. They ended up on 4 points and do not move on, which I believe is the only second time in this new format. Now, this new format started in 2016, so it's only the third tournament where it's happened. But ending, usually people tell you get to 4 points and you're guaranteed safety. That doesn't matter if you finish in fourth because it's only third place teams to go through. And kind of as evidence, I think there were two teams that ended up on 3 points that went through. Meanwhile, Ukraine on four could not go through because they finished in fourth place. So tough look there, tough scene for them there. But
Really could have
Romania,
used it.
what?
They could have used it.
Yeah.
Moral support.
Yeah. Maybe NATO could have brought them some more weapons to win a game. But Romania in first, Belgium in second, Slovakia in third, and then Ukraine in fourth kind of is the team that gets eliminated. Going into Group F, this group had a lot to play for the three non-first place teams. They were all still alive. Portugal had already secured first spot in the group, so they rested all their starters, played a weakened team against Georgia, and Georgia actually took a quick lead and then ended up doubling it, and Georgia actually beat Portugal 2-0. This then leads us to the most scandalous game of the tournament. This is kind of where I talked about the referee and what their stupid rules are and their images of the game that they like to talk about. Turkey versus Czechia. The ref absolutely lost control of the game in the first 20 minutes, and just anything he was doing, the players just didn't care anymore. So obviously, both teams are alive. Czechia needed a win. Turkey would have been okay with a tie. In the first 20 minutes, the referee gives out two yellow cards to the same Czech player, sending him off, which actually turned out to be a record for the Euros of the quickest time somebody has ever been sent off for multiple yellows at a European championship. And once that happened, the Czech players were kind of like, well, this is absolute bullshit. Like, you cannot send him off for that because in reality, you kind of want to look at a second yellow card offense as something that has to be drastic because you are sending someone off for that. Now, I understand the argument of, well, technically, he didn't get the red card for that foul. He got a yellow card for that foul that just so happened that he already had a first yellow card that we had to send him off because those are the rules. So I see both sides of the argument, but I think in moments like this and kind of to make sure that, like, you're not really completely changing the course of the game. If it's not egregious, and it wasn't egregious, I'll get into kind of the rules. Giving a second yellow was pretty harsh. And then the Czechs started doing some stupid stuff. They were going into angry, aggressive tackles because they were annoyed. They started flopping. They were drawing yellow cards on the Turkish players. The ref actually ended up giving out 18 yellow cards and two red cards over the course of the game. So also European records at the championships. He was basically booking anything that moved. There was a fight at the end between the teams all surrounding him. The Czechs were not happy because not only was the cards a problem, there were certain fouls that were being called that didn't exist. Like he was seeing things that didn't happen on the field, and then he was missing things that did happen on the field. The Czechs actually scored a second goal to go up 2-1, but it had been blown back for a foul that didn't exist. It didn't. And the ref had blown it dead, obviously. So I guess there's the argument, oh, well, it only goes in because we stopped playing. Who cares? There was a ball in the net. Referee completely lost the plot. Just doesn't. It was awful.
This is why I'll never, I still don't get, well, it makes so much sense to me to have two refs. And maybe that is too much of a cluster effort as far as
So,
spacing, how it would work. But, like, it's the one ref system has never made sense. And I know there's are they still called refs on the sidelines that do the offside?
the assistant refs, the linesman, whatever you want to call them.
I know there's those guys, but, like, hockey. Two refs, two linesmen. Baseball, there's an umpire at every base. Football, there's what? There's a guy, two
There'd
guys on
be
the
like eight of them
sidelines.
out there.
Yeah, there's like five. Yeah, I was gonna say five or six. Basketball, there's two of them out there, or three of them out there. So I just, it's never made.
Well, to be fair though, so I know what you're saying, where like obviously there's the head ref and like the linesman, they still give input. Like they're not just there to point, oh my God, throw him this way. Like if they see a foul, they'll throw their flag in the air. If they see something, they'll throw it. It was just this guy in the middle lost the plot. He
Okay.
completely lost his mind.
So they're, the linesmen are more like hockey linesmen.
Yes,
Like,
yeah, it's not
they're
like
not
they're
allowed
not
to
there for
actually
show.
call it, but they're
They
like,
signal. Like they're like,
they're,
hey,
yeah.
look, like I saw something, please whistle. Like it's they do their job. And
Okay.
they have a defined role that obviously goes behind sitting there in yellow, looking pretty and pointing a flag
That
once.
makes
It's
more sense.
not just like that. But yeah, I mean he completely lost the plot. I mean, Czechia was in a similar boat to Scotland where towards the end they needed to score. It was 1-1. They needed to score to win the game to keep themselves alive. And they're unable to. Obviously, kitchen sinks going forward. They're already playing a man down. Turkey goes down the field, scores to make it 2-1. Turkey wins. The Czechs go home. The group finishes Portugal in first, Turkey in second, Georgia in third, Czechia in fourth going home. So that's kind of the group stage. As we go on, I'm looking at the NBA draft. The first two picks have gone in. We've seen that. And so the third pick is in, so I'll try and kind of make this quick so we can live react to the Pistons' actual draft pick. But this bracket is kind of one-sided, and it's a little laughable, in my opinion, at the imbalance. So you've got Germany, Spain, Portugal, and France on one side, and the other side, in reality, only has England and Italy, where
I was gonna say, you just named off like probably the five
the four favorites, and then on the other side, you have England. And obviously, Italy's a
right.
name because of history, but they're not a very good team right now.
Okay.
So there's that. So we'll see how it plays out. But if the English are not in a final, they have utterly failed. And we'll
Now I
talk
know,
about.
yeah, that too. Now I know you named all the big dogs. Do you think Portugal with their kind of their stupor, I guess you could call it, against Georgia has
No.
any okay, they'll
I
be
mean,
fine.
I'll go on. So, I'm sorry. I mean, I would not consider this game in the form of anything. They were resting players.
Okay.
The only starter that played was Ronaldo, but that might be more of an indication that in the knockouts he's not going to be the
He's
starter, and
not,
they're going to go
yeah.
for more of an active team that can press, that can kind of do certain things. So I don't think that loss to Georgia has any bearing on what Portugal can or can't do. With that said, teams that impressed. Austria in a tough group played very well with two wins. They played some fluid soccer. It was very entertaining, very energetic to watch. Very kudos to them. It shows what having a real coach can do, especially to a team that's, let's say, not as talented as some of the others around. The Spanish, the only team that picked up all possible points in the group stage, they were great. I mean, even their reserves were able to get it done. They played fluidly, kind of a great combined team effort. And I'll give the Germans credit as well. I know that I mentioned earlier, I mean, they probably could have or should have lost to the Swiss, but the Germans' first two games, they kind of hammered the teams they were playing, and they look ready. They're feeding off the crowd. I know Germany the last couple of years, the last two World Cups specifically, have had a very contentious relationship with their fans because they've kind of completely shat the bed. And it looks like maybe it's because they're at home, or maybe because they're actually finally showing something worthy of a competition. They are feeding off the fans. The fans are supporting. So I've been impressed by the Germans. Teams that have disappointed me based on results, and I specifically phrase it like this because there's going to be afterwards where we're going to talk about the two morons. Croatia, obviously,
Yeah.
kind of going into that group and only getting 2 points. Disappointing results, but they played well. In that Spain game, they did lose 3-0, but they missed a penalty. They had great chances. That game could have been 3-3. They just couldn't finish. In the Austria or in the Austria in the Albania game, they were winning 2-1 in the 85th minute. They just kind of had a lapse on the defensive side and got scored on. And then same with Italy. They were winning in the 98th minute, couldn't get it done. So teams that disappointed based on results, but maybe didn't disappoint based on the play. And I also lump Belgium into this. Belgium played in a group where they should have taken 9 points. This is not the same Belgium team. Their golden generation has kind of aged out. But this is that group of Romania, Slovakia, Ukraine. There is no excuse to not win that group if you're Belgium with the players you have. So That's the teams that disappointed based on results. Teams that infuriated me with their play, France and England. These two morons, every game that sucked in the group stage featured these morons. And what makes it so frustrating is that on paper, these are the two most talented teams in the world. In the world. But they have the most pragmatic, defensive, anti-soccer coaches on planet Earth. And those coaches don't even know what their best teams are. You had England for the first two games of this tournament playing with a right back at center mid. You can't do that. They've got center attacking mids playing winger. They've got guys who are, or they've got a system where if you have guys with pace and you can run down the line and feed your very, very, very good striker named Harry Kane, if you can feed him, he can be great. But the guys they employed on the wings are not that, and it screws them over. They play boring soccer. I'm pretty sure the English only scored two goals in the group stage. The French only scored two goals, and none of them were open play. One of them was an own goal, the other was a penalty. So that brings me to France, where I understand Mbappe broke his nose and didn't play in the second game, but you're France. You've got more talent. You've got a reserve team of guys that didn't even get called up that could compete and probably be listed as favorites in this tournament. There is no excuse to play 300 plus minutes of the game if you include all the added time from all the games. No excuse to play 300 plus minutes of the game and not have a single open play goal. That is disgusting. So those two teams are horrendous. But they've made it through, and that's, I guess, all that counts. And maybe that's why their managers are still employed, because they get the job done, for lack of a better term, even though they play awful, awful soccer. But that's that. The last thing I want to say before, obviously, the Spurs pick is in, and the Pistons will be on the clock. But the last thing I want to say about this, and it kind of ties in with the Georgia and the, or the with the Turkey and the Czechia game, and kind of this image of soccer that the rules and the referees are told to try and uphold. They're trying to protect the players. And so if you see, like, if a guy gets stepped on, it's pretty much an automatic yellow card. That's stupid. It's like, I know people like to give me and soccer players shit. Soccer is a contact sport. Shit happens. It's okay. Now, if it's deliberate, if the guy's laying on the ground and I step on his hand, maybe you're looking at a card. But if we're playing and I accidentally step on his foot, why are we giving out cards? Not to mention, in this tournament, the rule is if you get two yellow cards, you are suspended for a game, and those yellow cards do not get erased until after the quarterfinals. So you're asking these players, and defenders specifically, or you're telling them, if you get a second yellow or two yellow cards in five games, or upwards of 450, potentially 550 minutes of play, that they can only get one yellow card a second and will have them suspended. That is atrocious. Now, they've also implemented this one thing, which I'm kind of okay with it, is they're trying to get rid of kind of the images that everyone's seen, where soccer is just a bunch of people trying to lobby the referee, and everyone's seen the pictures of 20 people surrounding the ref trying to state their case. They have made it so if you come up to the ref and you're not the captain and you're trying to kind of state your case, or you're trying to lobby him, you'll get a yellow straight away. I actually like that rule, but
Good rule.
not when you can only get two yellow cards over the span of a
Yeah,
tournament.
fair.
So I think they've just done some really stupid things. Where now, also, you want to try and protect your game? Try selling a game in the quarterfinals where potentially Mbappe's suspended because he got annoyed at something. Like, he's already on a yellow. Is it?
So, my question is, do you think that's them so worried about overstepping and having players injured for their club season that's coming up here soon,
They don't care about the
or
club season, because
okay, so it
this
is
is.
just their image of what Euro soccer or FIFA is supposed to look like,
So,
is
yeah, this is a tournament run by UEFA. They don't care about the club
UEFA, sorry.
season. They care about this tournament. And I just think it's like, I understand the principle. Like you said, it's a great rule to not have 20 dudes surrounding the referee complaining. No one wants to see that. I love that rule. But when you couple that with, oh, you can only get a second yellow card, or you can only get one yellow card, and the second one is, oh, strike, you're out. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's tough because you could get up after a call you didn't like and give like a Luka Doncic
Emotions
to
are,
the ref.
emotions run high.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or let's say you get a yellow for time wasting. If you've already gotten a yellow in two games earlier or three games earlier because you did something else, you're out of the quarterfinal if
And a
there is
ref's
one
not going
for
to know that from 3 games
Yeah.
ago.
And what's that? I don't even think it's about does know or doesn't know. It's just he's instructed. This is what I have to do, protect the image of the game. I think it's an asinine moment. Now, if the yellow cards had wiped after the group stage and then wiped again after, let's say, the semifinals, and it was a, hey, don't get two yellow cards in three games, I might be able to support that. But 2 and 5 is horrific. Horrific.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's kind of my rant with some of the rules that UEFA is implementing and trying to kind of get going. So I'm not the biggest fan of that, but that's kind of the soccer. So as we sit here, the Spurs just drafted Stephon Castle, the Detroit Pistons are on the clock, and it is widely rumored that we are going to be drafting a nepotism man named Matas Buzelis. So, who can't shoot, by the way? So I'm excited. I might be a little upset if I see that name on my screen when we pick.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at it right now. I knew the two French guys were supposed to go first. And to be honest, I know it's supposed to be a bad draft. And some of the names I'm seeing as best available are shocking too, that's left. This is a bad that Reed Sheppard kid is not that. He's like 6'1". Like
Yeah,
what's he,
I
and
know.
he's not and he's not that athletic. Like
No.
what's he gonna do in the NBA? I don't know. I don't know anything about the two French kids that went 1-2. I know they were kind of consensus 1-2s, but
Yeah, this is probably the worst draft ever. So that again, this Buzelis kid, for those who don't know, he's getting comped to like Jeremy Grant. With all due respect, if Jeremy Grant is the comp at the
yeah.
5th overall pick, like come on. What are we doing?
This says best of the ESPN app says best available is that Klingon guy from UConn.
And see, that's funny because we have no use for Kling because we already have Jalen Duren. Like, there is
Yeah.
no room in the NBA for two bigs who can't shoot. You
Yep.
can't do it. So
Then it's Matthias Bouzelis and then Dalton Knecht.
I would actually be okay with Knecht. He doesn't, he's obviously like, he's not some massive star, but at least he can shoot.
Shoot. Yeah, shooter. Yeah.
Yeah, like this is, I really hope it just comes in as like, oh my God, the Pistons have traded this pick. But then again, because it's the NBA draft, this fucking moron's gonna come out there with a Pistons hat and never play for us if we've traded this pick. So
Dude, I'd never even heard of most of these guys for best available.
yeah, it's bad. But this, yeah, so
McCann, Levin,
yeah,
Edie.
dude, it's so bad. And that's not to say that a couple of these kids aren't gonna hit and become good NBA players. Like,
Yeah.
that's why they get the chance. That's why they've worked their ass off. And I think I've argued this before with like people who try and be negative. Who am I to tell an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid he can't improve his game and become good at something? But dear Lord, at least you'll give us something to like hope for. And they just don't do that.
Yeah. So what's wrong with, I know it seems like he's a G leaguer. What's wrong with this Buzelis guy?
So
Just
my
not.
pro so the problem with Buzelis is this. So on the court, he's a wing, which, first of all, the NBA, you need wings. You got to be able to
Yeah.
match up with the Celtics. You just watched them win a title like that. But the issue with Buzelis is he's a wing who can't really shoot. He shot 27% in the G League from deep. Now, again, who am I to say he can't develop a shot? But it's still a little concerning if that's all you shot in the developmental leagues. Like, let's look at Cade Cunningham, another guy who people claim can't shoot. He shot 40% from deep in college on more volume than most people did. He jacked up 5 to 6 threes a game at Oklahoma State and made 40% of them. So it's not like he was out there like Mr. Brick Hands. So I don't love
Okay.
that. And then the bigger issue with Buzelis, and this is kind of where if you dive into the Pistons kind of rumor mills and annoyances, there is the belief that, or not belief, Matas Buzelis, his agent is called Michael Tellem. The Detroit Pistons employ somebody by the name of Arne Tellem as the vice president of the organization. He supposedly has a lot of sway and say over what happens. Now, I don't know if you noticed, those two names kind of sound similar. That is because they are father-son, and there is a long list and a long kind of precedent set over the last 5 years of Arne Tellem clients and Arne Tellem this and Arne Tellem that guys coming to the Pistons and just totally just flopping. I mean, there's no other definition to describe what the Pistons have been for the last half decade. So There's the argument that there would have been a nepotism kind of pick for Buzelis, and that's kind of the annoyance. But pick is in. Adam Silver should be walking out on stage at any point. I'm ready to get annoyed, and let's see what happens. Did I lose you? I saw you were kind of frozen for a bit, but are you here?
Yeah, just a second. Yeah, I'm here.
Right. But yeah, so we'll probably see this pick. We'll see what happens, and I guess we'll probably cut it there. This has actually kind of turned out to be a relatively long episode based on when we started and kind of how we did, but I think the timing went well. We were able to talk hockey, some of the little smaller
Yeah.
stuff, and then go into the soccer, and it kind of wrapped it up perfectly for the Pistons without having to kind of sit here and scream too long about who is this, who is this, who is this. So let's see here. Dude, these best availables are crazy. Dude, this pick has been in for years. What's going on here? Do you think Adam Silver plans on coming out at any point? This pick has been in for 5 minutes.
He's like, "Are you guys sure? You guys have sucked long enough. Try again."
It's like, yeah. Oh, here he goes. Woo! Yeah, we've got Ron Holland from Dallas, Texas, G League Ignite. I don't know anything about him, but he's not Matas Buzelis, so go team.
No, he was. Holy shit. He was not on the.
He was not on the list.
He was not on the best available.
All right, let me go look at this man's stats. So Ron Holland, I mean, he's a wing. That's kind of cool. I'm a big fan of wings. What are his G League stats? Can this man shoot? Please tell me he can shoot. Oh my God, he shoots 24% from deep.
Oh,
What
even worse.
are we doing? Guys, what are we doing? Oh well. Hey, he was the number two recruit in the 2023 ESPN 100. That's got to count for something, right?
I guess so.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and say that an 18, 19-year-old kid can't be good. And if they think that this guy has high upside, more power to him. The Pistons need upside because floor is for teams who are close and they just need a couple of ready now guys. The Pistons are not that. So if Ron
Yeah.
Holland turns out to be a guy in a couple of years, let's go. More power to him. Welcome to the Pistons, man. I hope you enjoy the lottery.
Yeah.
That's all you're ever gonna know.
Yeah, get used to this.
Yeah, absolutely. Jesus. All right. I'm not gonna say much more about a guy I've never heard of and listen to more picks about guys
Okay.
I've never heard of. So to those who have made it this far, I hope you kind of enjoyed the live reactions. I think it's the first time we've done something like this where we've live reacted to a sporting event or
Yes.
to a draft. So I kind of had a fun time. Maybe this becomes something more often, but yeah, that's for me. I'm gonna kind of sign off with Go Pistons, and I leave it to you, man.
Welcome to Detroit, Rod.